can talk sometime. I'd like that, after this. But let's get this story, and then maybe we can enjoy ourselves. I didn't intend on staying more than a minute after the interview wrapped. Okay. So, here it is. I think I know why. The teeth. She pantomimed extraction. Why? I can't believe everyone refuses to acknowledge this, she said. Meredith glanced around the room. You didn't hear this from me, okay? She continued. The girls, Anne and Natalie, they were biters. What do you mean, biters? Both of them. They had serious tempers, like scary time tempers, like boy tempers. But they didn't hit. They bit. Look. She held out her right hand. Just below the thumb were three white scars that shone in the afternoon light. That's from Natalie. And this. She pulled back her hair to reveal a left ear with only half an earlobe. My hand she bit when I was painting her fingernails. She decided halfway through that she didn't like it, but I told her to let me finish, and when I held her hand down, she sunk her teeth into me. And the earlobe? I stayed over there one night when my car wouldn't start. I was asleep in the guest room, and the next thing I knew, blood all over the sheets, and my ear just felt like it was on fire, like I wanted to run away from it, but it was attached to my head. And Natalie was screaming like she was on fire. That screaming was scarier than the biting. Mr. Keene had to hold her down. The kid had serious problems. We looked for my earlobe, see if it could be stitched back on, but it was gone. I guess she swallowed it. She gave a laugh that sounded like the reverse of a gulp of air. I mostly just felt sorry for her.
Lie.
Anne, was she as bad? I asked. Worse. There are people all over this town with her teeth marks in them, your mother included. What? My hands began to sweat and the back of my neck went cold. Your mom was tutoring her and Anne didn't understand. She completely lost it. Pulled some of your mama's hair out and bit into her wrist. Hard. I think there had to be stitches. Images of my mother's thin arm caught between tiny teeth, Anne shaking her head like a dog, blood blossoming on my mother's sleeve, on Anne's lips. A scream. A release. A little circle of jagged lines, and within, a ring of perfect skin. Chapter 11. Phone calls back in my room. No sign of my mother. I could hear Alan downstairs, snapping at Gayla for cutting the fillets wrong.
I know it seems trivial, Gayla, but think of it like this. Trivial details are the difference between a good meal and a dining experience.
Gayla emitted an assenting sound. Even her mm-hmms have a twang. I phoned Richard on his cell, one of the few people in Wind Gap to own one, though I shouldn't snipe, since I'm one of the only holdouts in Chicago. I just never want to be that reachable.
Detective Willis.
I could hear a loudspeaker calling a name in the background. You busy, detective? I blushed. Levity felt like flirting, felt like foolishness.
Hi there, came his formal voice. I'm wrapping things up here. Can I give a call back?
Sure. I'm at...
The number shows up on my display.
Fancy.
Very true.
20 minutes later.
Sorry. I was at the hospital in Woodbury with Vickery.
A lead?
Of sorts.
A comment?
I had a very nice time last night.
I'd written Richard, cop, Richard, cop, 12 times down my leg, and had to make myself stop because I was itching for a razor. Me too. Look, I need to ask you something straight, and I need you to tell me, off record. Then I need a comment I can print for my next piece.
Okay, I'll try to help you, Camille. What do you need to ask me?
Can we meet at that cheesy bar we first had a drink at? I need to do this in person, and I need to get out of the house, and... Yes, I'll say it. I need a drink. Three guys from my class were at Censors when I got there. Nice guys. One of whom had famously won a state fair blue ribbon for his obscenely big, milk-dripping sow one year. A folksy stereotype Richard would have loved. We exchanged niceties. They bought me my first two rounds, and photographs of their kids, eight in all. One of them, Jason Turnbow, was still as blonde and round-faced as a kid. Tongue just peeking out the corner of his mouth, pink cheeks, round blue eyes darting between my face and my breasts for most of the conversation. He stopped once I pulled out my tape recorder and asked about the murders. Then it was those whirling wheels that had his full attention. People got such a charge from seeing their names in print. Proof of existence. I could picture a squabble of ghosts ripping through piles of newspapers, pointing at a name on the page. See? There I am. I told you I lived. I told you I was. Who'd have thought when we were kids back in school we'd be sitting here talking about murders in Wind Gap? Marveled Tommy Ringer, now grown into a dark-haired fellow with a rangy beard.
I know. I mean, I work in a supermarket, for Christ's sakes, said Ron Laird, a kindly, mouse-faced guy with a booming voice.
The three glowed with misplaced civic pride. Infamy had come to Wind Gap, and they'd take it. They could keep working at the supermarket, the drugstore, the hatchery. When they died, this, along with getting married and having kids, would be on their list of things they'd done. And it was something that merely happened to them. No, more accurately, it was something that happened in their town. I wasn't entirely sure about Meredith's assessment. Some people would love to have the killer be a guy born and raised in Wind Gap. Someone they went fishing with once. Someone they were in Cub Scouts with. Makes a better story. Richard flung open the door, which was surprisingly light for its looks. Any customer who wasn't a regular used too much force, so every few minutes the door banged into the side of the building. It offered an interesting punctuation to conversation. As he walked in, pitching his jacket over his shoulder, the three men groaned.
This guy. I'm so fucking impressed, dude. Save some brain cells for the case, buddy. You need 'em.
I hopped off the stool, licked my lips, and smiled. Well, fellas, gotta go to work. Interview time. Thanks for the drinks.
We'll be over here when you get bored, Jason called out.
Richard just smiled at him, muttering idiot through his teeth. I slugged back my third bourbon, grabbed the waitress to set us up, and once we had our drinks in front of us, I rested my chin on my hands and wondered if I really wanted to talk business. He had a scar just above his right eyebrow and a tiny dimple in his chin. He tapped his foot on top of mine twice, where no one could see.
So, what gives, Scoop?
Look, I need to know something. I really need to know it. And if you can't tell me, then you can't tell me. But please think hard. He nodded. When you think of the person who did these killings, do you have a specific person in your mind? I asked.
I have a few.
Male or female?
Why are you asking me this with such urgency right now, Camille?
I just need to know. He paused, sipped his drink, rubbed his hand over stubble on his chin.
I don't believe a woman would have done these girls this way.
He tapped my foot again.
Hey, what's going on? You tell me the truth now.
I don't know. I'm just freaking out. I just needed to know where to point my energies. Let me help. Did you know the girls were known for biting people?
I understood from the school there had been an incident involving Anne hurting a neighbor's bird, he said. Natalie was on a pretty tight leash, though, because of what happened at her last school.
Natalie bit the earlobe off of someone she knew.
No. I have no incident reports filed against Natalie since she came here.
Then they didn't report it. I saw the ear, Richard. There was no lobe, and there was no reason for this person to lie. And Anne attacked someone, too. Bit someone. But I wonder more and more if these girls got tangled up with the wrong person. It's like they were put down, like a bad animal. Maybe that's why their teeth were taken. Let's begin slowly. First, who did each of the girls bite? I can't say. God damn it, Camille, I'm not fucking around. Tell me. No. I was surprised at his anger. I'd expected him to laugh and tell me I was pretty when defiant. This is a fucking murder case, okay? If you have information, I need it. So do your job. I'm trying, Camille, but your screwing around with me doesn't help. Now you know how it feels, I muttered childishly. Fine, he rubbed at his eyes. I've had a real long day, so good night. I hope I was helpful to you. He stood up, nudged his half-full glass over to me. I need an on-record quote. Later. I need to get a little perspective. You may have been right about us being a horrible idea. He left, and the guys called me to come back and join them. I shook my head, finished my drink, and pretended to take notes until they left. All I did was write, sick place, over and over for 12 pages. This time it was Alan waiting for me when I got home. He was sitting on the Victorian love seat, white brocade and black walnut, dressed in white slacks and a silk shirt, dainty white silk slippers on his feet. If he'd been in a photograph, it would be impossible to place him in time. Victorian gentleman, Edwardian dandy, 50s fop, 21st century house husband who never worked, often drank, and occasionally made love to my mother. Very rarely did Alan and I talk outside of my mother's presence. As a child, I'd once bumped into him in the hallway, and he'd bent down stiffly to my eye level and said, "Hello, I hope you're well." We'd been living in the same house for more than 5 years, and that's all he could come up with. "Yes, thank you," was all I could give in return. Now, though, Alan seemed ready to take me on. He didn't say my name, just patted the couch beside him. On his knee, he balanced a cake plate with several large silvery sardines. I could smell them from the entryway. "Camille," he said, picking out a tail with a tiny fish fork. "You're making your mother ill. I'm going to have to ask you to leave if conditions don't improve."
"How am I making her ill?"
"By tormenting her. By constantly bringing up Marion. You can't speculate to the mother of a dead child how that child's body might look in the ground right now. I don't know if that's something you can feel detached from, but Adora can't."
A glob of fish tumbled down his front, leaving a row of greasy stains the size of buttons.
"You can't talk to her about the corpses of these two dead little girls, or how much blood must have come out of their mouths when their teeth were pulled, or how long it took for a person to strangle them."
"Alan, I never said any of those things to my mother. Nothing even close. I truly have no idea what she's talking about." I didn't even feel indignant, just weary.
"Please, Camille. I know how strained your relationship is with your mother. I know how jealous you've always been of anyone else's well-being. It's true, you know. You really are like Adora's mother. She'd stand guard over this house like a witch, old and angry. Laughter offended her. The only time she ever smiled was when you refused to nurse from Adora, refused to take the nipple."
That word on Alan's oily lips lit me up in 10 different places. Suck, bitch, rubber, all caught fire.
"And you know this from Adora?" I prompted.
He nodded, lips pursed beatifically.
"Like you know that I said horrible things about Marion and the dead girls from Adora."
"Exactly," he said,
the syllables precisely cut.
Adora is a liar. If you don't know that, you're an idiot. Adora's had a hard life.
I forced out a laugh. Alan was undaunted.
Her mother used to come into her room in the middle of the night and pinch her when she was a child, he said, eyeing the last slab of sardine pitifully. She said it was because she was worried Adora would die in her sleep. I think it was because she just liked to hurt her.
A jangle of memory. Marion down the hall in her pulsing, machine-filled invalid's room. A sharp pain on my arm. My mother standing over me in her cloudy nightgown, asking if I was okay, kissing the pink circle and telling me to go back to sleep.
I just think you should know these things, Alan said. Might make you a bit kinder to your mother. I had no plans for being kinder to my mother. I just wanted the conversation to end. I'll try to leave as soon as I can.
Be a good idea if you can't make amends, Alan said. But you might feel better about yourself if you tried. Might help you heal. Your mind, at least.
Alan grabbed the last floppy sardine and sucked it into his mouth whole. I could picture the tiny bones snapping as he chewed. A tumbler full of ice and an entire bottle of bourbon purloined from the back kitchen, then up to my room to drink. The booze hit me fast, probably because that was how I was drinking it. My ears were hot and my skin had stopped its blinking. I thought about that word at the back of my neck. Vanish. Vanish will banish my woes, I thought loopily. Vanish will banish my troubles. Would we have been this ugly if Marion hadn't died? Other families got over such things, grieve and move on. She still hovered over us. A blonde baby girl, maybe a hair too cute for her own good, maybe just a bit too doted on. This before she got sick, really sick. She had an invisible friend, a giant stuffed bear she called Ben. What kind of kid has an imaginary friend that's a stuffed animal? She collected hair ribbons and arranged them in alphabetical order by color name. She was the kind of girl who exploited her cuteness with such joy you couldn't begrudge her. Batting of the eyes, tossing of the curls. She called my mother Mutter, and Alan... Hell, maybe she called Alan Alan. I can't place him in the room in these memories. She always cleaned her plate, kept a remarkably tidy room, and refused to wear anything but dresses and Mary Janes. She called me Meal, and she couldn't keep her hands off me. I adored her. Drunk but still drinking, I took a tumbler of liquor and crept down the hallway to Marion's room. Amma's door, just one room down, had been closed for hours. What was it like growing up next to the room of a dead sister you never met? I felt a pang of sorrow for Amma. Alan and my mother were in their big corner bedroom, but the light was out and the fan whirring. No such thing as central air in these old Victorians, and my mother finds room units tacky, so we sweat the summers out. 90 degrees, but the heat made me feel safe, like walking underwater. The pillow on her bed still had a small indentation. A set of clothes was laid out as if covering a living child. Violet dress, white tights, shiny black shoes. Who'd done that? My mother? Amma? The IV stand that had tailed Marion so relentlessly in her last year was standing, alert and shiny, next to the rest of the medical equipment. The bed that was 2 feet taller than standard to allow patient access. The heart monitor. The bedpan. I was disgusted my mother hadn't purged this stuff. It was a clinical and utterly lifeless room. Marion's favorite doll had been buried with her, a massive rag doll with blonde yarn curls to match my sister's, Evelyn, or Eleanor. The rest were lined against the wall on a set of stands, like fans and bleachers. 20 or so with white china faces and deep glassy eyes. I could see her so easily here, sitting cross-legged on that bed, small and sweat-dotted, her eyes ringed with purple, shuffling cards or combing her doll's hair or coloring angrily. I could hear that sound, a crayon running in hard lines across a paper, dark scribbles with the crayon pushed so hard it ripped the paper. She looked up at me, breathing hard and shallow. I'm tired of dying. I skidded back to my room as if I were being chased. The phone rang 6 times before Eileen picked up. Things the Currys don't have in their home. A microwave, a VCR, a dishwasher, an answering machine. Her hello was smooth but tense. Guess they don't get many calls after 11. She pretended they hadn't been asleep, that they simply hadn't heard the phone, but it took another 2 minutes to get Curry on the line. I pictured him, shining his glasses on the corner of pajamas, putting on old leather slippers, looking at the glowing face of an alarm clock, a soothing image. Then I realized I was remembering a commercial for an all-night pharmacy in Chicago. It had been 3 days since I'd last talked to Curry, nearly 2 weeks since I'd been in Wind Gap. Any other circumstance, and he'd have been phoning me 3 times a day for updates. But he couldn't bring himself to ring me at a civilian's, at my mother's house, no less, down in Missouri, which in his Windy City mind he equated with the Deep South. Any other circumstances, and he'd be rumbling into the phone at me for not staying in pocket. But not tonight.
Gubby, you okay? What's the story?
Well, I haven't gotten this on record, but I will. The police definitely think the killer is male, definitely from Wind Gap, and they have no DNA, no kill site. They really have very little. Either the killer is a mastermind or an accidental genius. The town seems to be focusing on Natalie Keene's brother, John. I have his girlfriend on record protesting his innocence.
Good. Good stuff. But I really meant... I was asking about you. You doing okay down there? You have to tell me, because I can't see your face. Don't do the stoic thing.
I'm not so good. But what does that matter? My voice came out higher and more bitter than I'd planned. This is a good story, and I think I'm on the edge of something. I feel like another few days, a week, and... I don't know. The little girls bit people. That's what I got today. And the cop I've been working with, he didn't even know.
You told him that? What was his comment?
Nothing.
Why the hell didn't you get a comment, girl?
See, Curry, Detective Willis felt I was holding back some information, and so he sulked off like all men do when they don't get their way with women they've fooled around with. I screwed up. I'll get it, though. I need a few more days before I file, Curry. Get a little more local color, work on this cop. I think they're almost convinced a little press would help juice things. Not that anyone reads our paper down here. Or up there.
They will. You'll get some serious notice for this, Cubby. Your stuff is getting close to good. Push harder. Go talk to some of your old friends. They might be more open. Plus, it's good for the peace. That Texas Floods series that won the Pulitzer had a whole story on the guy's perspective about coming home during a tragedy. Great read. And a friendly face, a few beers might do you good. Sounds like you've already had a few tonight.
A few.
Are you feeling like this is a bad situation for you? With the recovery?
I heard a lighter strike. The scratch of a kitchen chair across linoleum. A grunt as Curry sat down.
Oh, it's not for you to worry about. Of course it is. Don't play martyr, Cubby. I'm not going to penalize you if you need to leave. You've got to take care of yourself. I thought being home might do you good, but I forget sometimes parents aren't always good for their kids.
Whenever I'm here, I stopped, tried to pull it together. I just always feel like I'm a bad person when I'm here. Then I started crying, silent sobbing as Curry stammered on the other end. I could picture him panicking, waving Eileen over to handle this weeping girl. But no.
"Oh, Camille," he whispered. "You are one of the most decent people I know. And there aren't that many decent people in this world, you know? With my folks gone, it's basically you and Eileen."
"I'm not decent." The tip of my pen was scribbling deep, scratchy words into my thigh. Wrong. Woman. Teeth.
"Camille, you are. I see how you treat people. Even the most worthless pieces of crap I can think of. You give them some dignity, understanding. Why do you think I keep you around? Not because you're a great reporter."
Silence and thick tears on my end. Wrong. Woman. Teeth.
Was that funny at all? I meant it to be funny.
No.
"My grandfather was in vaudeville, but I guess that gene missed me."
"He was?"
"Oh, yeah. Straight off the boat from Ireland and New York City. He was a hilarious guy. Played four instruments."
Another spark of a lighter. I pulled the thin covers up over me and closed my eyes. Listen to Curry's story. Chapter 12. Richard was living in Wingap's only apartment building, an industrial box built to house four tenants. Only two apartments were filled. The stumpy columns holding up the carport had been spray-painted red, four in a row reading, "Stop the Democrats, stop the Democrats, stop the Democrats." Then randomly, "I like Louie." Wednesday morning. The storm still sitting in a cloud above town. Hot and windy, piss-yellow light. I banged on his door with the corner of a bourbon bottle. Bear gifts if you can't bear anything else. I'd stopped wearing skirts. Makes my legs too accessible to someone prone to touching. If he was anymore. He opened the door smelling of sleep. Tousled hair, boxers, a t-shirt inside out. No smile. He kept the place frigid. I could feel the air from where I was standing.
"You want to come in, or you want me to come out?" he asked, scratching his chin. Then he spotted the bottle. "Ah, come in. I guess we're getting drunk."
The place was a mess, which surprised me. Pants strewn over chairs, a garbage can near overflowing, boxes of papers piled up in awkward spots in the hallways, forcing you to turn sideways to pass. He motioned me to a cracked leather sofa and returned with a tray of ice and two glasses, poured fat portions.
"So, I shouldn't have been so rude last night," he said.
"Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm giving you a fair amount of information and you're not giving me any."
"I'm trying to solve a murder. You're trying to report about that. I think I get priority. There are certain things, Camille, that I'm just not able to tell you."
"And vice versa. I have a right to protect my sources."
"Which in turn could help protect the person doing these killings."
"You can figure it out, Richard. I gave you almost everything."
"Jeez, do a little work on your own."
We stared at each other.
"I love it when you get all tough reporter on me," Richard smiled,
shook his head, poked me with his bare foot.
"I actually really kind of do."
He poured us each another glass. We'd be smashed before noon. He pulled me to him, kissed me on my lobe, stuck his tongue in my ear.
"So, Wingap girl, how bad exactly were you?" he whispered. "Tell me about the first time you did it."
"The first time was the second time, was the third, was the fourth, thanks to my eighth-grade encounter. I decided to leave it at the first. I was 16. I lied. Older seemed more appropriate for the mood. I fucked a football player in the bathroom at this party.
My tolerance was better than Richard's. He was already looking glazed, twirling a finger around my nipple, hard beneath my shirt. Did you come? I nodded. I remember pretending to come. I remember a murmur of an orgasm, but that wasn't until they passed me over to the third guy. I remember thinking it was sweet that he kept panting in my ear. Is this all right? Is this all right? Do you want to come now? With me? Richard whispered. I nodded, and he was on me. Those hands everywhere, trying to go up my shirt, then struggling to unbutton my pants, tug them down. Hold on, hold on. My way, I whispered. I like it with my clothes on. No, I want to touch you. No, baby. My way. I pulled my pants down just a little bit, kept my stomach covered with my shirt, kept him distracted with well-placed kisses. Then I guided him into me, and we fucked, fully clothed, the crack on the leather couch scratching my ass. Trash. Pump. Little. Girl. It was the first time I'd been with a man in 10 years. Trash. Pump. Little. Girl. His groaning was soon louder than my skin. Only then could I enjoy it. Those last few sweet thrusts. He lay half beside me, half on top of me, and panted when it was done, still holding the neck of my shirt in his fist. The day had gone black. We were trembling on the edge of a thunderstorm. Tell me who you think did it, I said. He looked shocked. Was he expecting I love you? He twirled my hair for a minute, poked his tongue in my ear. When denied access to other body parts, men become fixated on the ear. Something I'd learned in the last decade. He couldn't touch my breasts or my ass, my arms or my legs, but Richard seemed content for now with my ear. Between you and me, it's John Keane. The kid was very close to his sister, in an unhealthy way. He has no alibi. I think he's got a thing for little girls that he's trying to fight. Ends up killing them and pulling the teeth for a thrill. He won't be able to hold out much longer, though. This is going to accelerate. We're checking for any weird behavior back in Philly. Could be Natalie's problems weren't the only reason they moved.
I need something on record.
Who told you about the biting, and who did the girls bite? He whispered hot in my ear. Outside, the rain began hitting the pavement like someone pissing.
Meredith Wheeler told me Natalie bit her earlobe off.
What else?
Anne bit my mother, on her wrist. That's it.
See, that wasn't so hard. Good girl, he whispered, stroking my nipple again. Now give me something on record. No, he smiled at me. My way.
Richard fucked me another time that afternoon, finally gave me a grudging quote about a break in the case and an arrest likely. I left him asleep in his bed and ran through the rain to my car. A random thought clanged in my head. Emma would have gotten more from him. I drove to Garrett Park and sat in my car staring at the rain because I didn't want to go home. Tomorrow this spot would be filled with kids beginning their long, lazy summer. Now it was just me, feeling sticky and stupid. I couldn't decide if I'd been mistreated by Richard, by those boys who took my virginity, by anyone. I was never really on my side in any argument. I liked the Old Testament spitefulness of the phrase, got what she deserved. Sometimes women do. Silence, and then not. The yellow IROC rumbled up next to me, Emma and Kylie sharing the front passenger seat. A scraggly-haired boy wearing gas station shades and a stained undershirt was in the driver's seat. His skinny doppelganger in back. Smoke rolled out of the car, along with the smell of citrus-flavored liquor.
"Get in. We're going to party a little," Emma said.
She was proffering a bottle of cheap orange-flavored vodka. She stuck her tongue out and let a raindrop splash on it. Her hair and tank top were already dripping.
"I'm fine, thanks."
"You don't look it." "Come on.
They're patrolling the park. You'll get a DUI for sure. I can smell you."
"Come on, Chiquita," Kylie called. "You can help us keep these boys in line."
I thought about my options. Go home, drink by myself. Go to a bar, drink with whatever guys floated over. Go with these kids, maybe hear some interesting gossip at the very least. An hour, then home to sleep it off. Plus, there was Emma and her mysterious friendliness toward me. I hated to admit it, but I was becoming obsessed with the girl. The kids cheered as I got in the back seat. Emma passed around a different bottle, hot rum that tasted like suntan lotion. I worried they'd ask me to buy them liquor. Not because I wouldn't. Pathetically, I wanted them to just want me along. Like I was popular once again. Not a freak. Approved of by the coolest girl in school. The thought was almost enough to make me jump out of the car and walk home. But then Emma passed the bottle again. The rim was ringed with pink lip gloss. The boy next to me, introduced only as Nolan, nodded and wiped sweat off his upper lip. Skinny arms with scabs and a face full of acne. Meth. Missouri is the second most addicted state in the Union. We get bored down here, and we have a lot of farm chemicals. When I grew up, it was mostly the hardcores that did it. Now it was a party drug. Nolan was running his finger up and down the vinyl ribbing of the driver's seat in front of him, but he looked up at me long enough to say, "You're like my mom's age. I like it." "I doubt I'm quite your mom's age. She's like 33, 34. "Close enough. What's her name?" "Casey Rayburn." I knew her. A few years older than me. Factory side. Too much hair gel and a fondness for the Mexican chicken killers down on the Arkansas border. During a church retreat, she told her group she'd tried to commit suicide. The girls at school started calling her Casey Razor. "Must have been before my time," I said.
"Dude, this chick was too cool to hang with your druggy whore mama," the driver said. "Fuck you," Nolan whispered.
"Camille, look what we got."
Emma leaned over the passenger's seat so her rear was bumping Kylie's face. She shook a bottle of pills at me.
"Oxycontin. Makes you feel real good."
She stuck out her tongue and placed three in a row like white buttons, then chewed and swallowed with a gulp of vodka.
"Try."
"No thanks, Emma." "Oxycontin is good stuff. Doing it with your kid sister isn't."
"Oh, come on, Meal. Just one," she wheedled. "You'll feel lighter. I feel so happy and good right now. You have to, too."
"I feel fine, Emma."
Her calling me Meal took me back to Marion. "I promise." She turned back around and sighed, looking irretrievably glum. "Come on, Emma, you can't care that much," I said, touching her shoulder.
"I did."
I couldn't take it. I was losing ground, feeling that dangerous need to please, just like the old days. And really, one wasn't going to kill me.
"Okay, okay, give me one. One."
She immediately brightened and flung herself back to face me.
"Put out your tongue, like communion. Drug communion."
I put out my tongue and she set the pill on the tip and squealed.
"Good girl," she smiled.
I was getting tired of that phrase today. We pulled up outside one of Wingap's great old Victorian mansions, completely renovated and repainted in ludicrous blues and pinks and greens that were supposed to be funky. Instead, the place looked like the home of a mad ice cream man.
A boy with no shirt was throwing up in the bushes to the side of the house. Two kids were wrestling in what was left of a flower garden, and a young couple was in full spider embrace on a child's swing. Nolan was abandoned in a car, still running his fingers up and down that piping. The driver, Damon, locked him in, so no one fucks with him. I found it a charming gesture. Thanks to the OxyContin, I was feeling quite game, and as we walked into the mansion, I caught myself looking for faces from my youth. Boys in buzz cuts and letter jackets, girls with spiral perms and chunky gold earrings, the smell of Dracar Noir and Giorgio. All gone. The boys here were babies in loose skater shorts and sneakers, the girls in halters and miniskirts and belly rings, and they were all staring at me as if I might be a cop. No, but I fucked one this afternoon. I smiled and nodded. I am terribly chipper, I thought mindlessly. In the cavernous dining room, the table had been pushed to one side to make room for dancing and coolers. Emma bopped into the circle, grinded against a boy until the back of his neck turned red. She whispered into his ear, and with his nod, opened up a cooler and plucked out four beers, which she held against her wet bosom, pretending to have a hard time juggling them as she jiggled past an appreciative group of boys. The girls were less so. I could see the sniping zip through the party like a line of firecrackers. But the little blondes had two things going for them. First, they were with a local drug dealer, who was sure to swing some clout. Second, they were prettier than almost any other female there, which meant the boys would refuse to boot them. And this party was hosted by a boy, as I could tell by the photos on the living room mantel, a dark-haired kid, blandly handsome, posing in cap and gown for his senior photo. Nearby, a shot of his proud father and mother. I knew Mom. She was the older sister of one of my high school friends. The idea that I was at her child's party gave me my first wave of nerves.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God!
A brunette with frog eyes and a T-shirt, proudly blaring the gap, ran past us and grabbed a similarly amphibious-looking girl.
They came! They totally came!
Shit, replied her friend. This is too good. Do we say hello?
I think we wait and see what happens. If J.C. doesn't want them here, then we gotta stay out of it.
Totally.
I knew before I saw him. Meredith Wheeler entered the living room, tugging John Keane behind. A few guys gave him nods, a few offered pats on the shoulder. Others pointedly turned their backs and closed their circles. Neither John nor Meredith noticed me, for which I was relieved. Meredith spotted a circle of skinny, bow-legged girls, fellow cheerleaders, I assumed, standing at the door of the kitchen. She squealed and hopped over to them, stranding John in the living room. The girls were even chillier than the guys had been.
"Hi," said one without smiling. "I thought you said you weren't coming."
I decided that was just stupid. Anyone with a brain knows John's cool. We're not going to be fucking outcasts just because of all this crap.
It's not cool, Meredith. J.C. is not cool with this,
said a redhead who was either J.C.'s girlfriend or wanted to be.
I'll talk to him, Meredith whined.
Let me talk to him.
I think you should just go.
Did they really take John's clothes?
Asked a third tiny girl who had a maternal air about her, the one who ended up holding hair while her friends threw up.
Yes, but that's to completely eliminate him. It's not because he's in trouble.
Whatever, said the redhead. I hated her.
Meredith scanned the room for more friendly faces and spotted me, looked confused, spotted Kelsey, looked furious. Leaving John by the door, pretending to check his watch, tie his shoe, look nonchalant as the crowds kicked into full scandal buzz, she strode over to us.
What are you doing here?
Her eyes were full of tears, beads of sweat on her forehead. The question seemed to be addressed to neither of us. Maybe she was asking herself.
Damon brought us,
Emma chirped. She hopped twice on the tips of her feet.
I can't believe you're here, and I definitely can't believe he's showing his face.
God, you're such a little bitch. You know nothing, you fucking druggy fucker.
Meredith's voice was quivering, like a top twirling toward the edge of a table.
Better than what you're fucking, Emma said. Hi, murderer.
She waved at John, who seemed to notice her for the first time and suddenly looked like he'd been smacked. He was about to walk over when J.C. appeared from another room and took John aside. Two tall boys discussing death and house parties. The room tuned to a low whisper, watching. J.C. patted John on the back in a way that aimed him directly for the door. John nodded to Meredith and headed out. She followed quickly, her head bowed, hands up to her face. Just before John made it to the door, some boy blurted in a high, teasing voice,
"Baby killer!"
Nervous laughs and eye-rolling. Meredith screeched once, wildly, turned around, teeth bared, yelled, "Fuck y'all!" and slammed the door. The same boy mimicked it for the crowd, a coy, girlish, "Fuck y'all," jutting his hip out to one side. J.C. turned the music back up, a teenage girl's synthesized pop voice teasing about blowjobs. I wanted to follow John and just put my arms around him. I'd never seen anyone look so lonesome, and Meredith seemed unlikely to be of solace. What would he do back by himself in that empty carriage house? Before I could run after him, Emma grabbed my hand and pulled me upstairs to the VIP room, where she and the blondes and two high school boys with matching shaved heads rifled through J.C.'s mom's closet, flinging her best clothes off the hangers to make a nest. They clambered on the bed in the circle of satin and furs, Emma pulling me next to her and producing a button of ecstasy from her bra.
"You ever played a game of rolling roulette?" she asked me.
I shook my head.
"You pass the X around from tongue to tongue, and the tongue it dissolves on last is the lucky winner. This is Damon's best shit, though, so we'll all roll a little."
"No, thanks. I'm good," I said. I'd almost agreed until I saw the alarmed look on the boys' faces. I must have reminded them of their mothers.
"Oh, come on, Camille. I won't tell, for Christ's sakes,"
Emma whined, picking at a fingernail.
"Do it with me, sisters. Please, Camille,"
moaned Kylie and Kelsey. Jodes watched me silently. The OxyContin and the booze and the sex from earlier and the storm that still hung wet outside and my wrecked skin, icebox popping eagerly on one arm, and the stained thoughts of my mother. I don't know which hit hardest, but suddenly I was allowing Emma to kiss my cheek excitedly. I was nodding yes, and Kylie's tongue hit one boy, who nervously passed the pill to Kelsey, who licked the second boy, his tongue big as a wolf's, who slopped over Jode's, who wobbled her tongue hesitantly out to Emma, who lapped the pill up, and tongue, soft and little and hot, passed the X into my mouth, wrapping her arms around me and pushing the pill down hard on my tongue, until I could feel it crumble in my mouth. It dissolved like cotton candy.
"Drink lots of water," she whispered to me, then giggled loudly at the circle, flinging herself back on a mink.
"Fuck, Emma. The game hadn't even started," the wolf boy snapped, his cheeks flushed red.
"Camille is my guest," Emma said mock haughtily. "Plus, she could use a little sunshine. She's had a pretty shitty life. We have a dead sister just like John Keane. She's never dealt with it."
She announced it as if she were helping break the ice between cocktail party guests. David owns his own dry goods store, James just returned from an assignment in France, and, oh yes, Camille has never gotten over her dead sister. Can I refresh anyone's drink?
"I've got to go," I said, standing too abruptly, a red satin halter clinging to my backside. I had about 15 minutes till I really started rolling, and this wasn't where I wanted to be when it happened. Again, though,
the problem. Richard, while a drinker, wasn't likely to condone anything more serious, and I sure as hell didn't want to sit in my steamy bedroom, alone and high, listening for my mother.
"Come with me,"
Emma offered. She slipped a hand into her over-padded bra and pulled a pill from its lining, popping it in her mouth and smiling huge and cruel at the rest of the kids, who looked hopeful but daunted. None for them.
"We'll go swimming, Neil. It'll feel so outrageous when we start rolling."
She grinned, flashing perfect square white teeth. I had no fight left. It seemed easier to go along. We were down the stairs, into the kitchen, peach-faced young boys assessing us with confusion, one a shade too young, one definitely too old. We were grabbing bottled water from the icebox, that word suddenly panting again on my skin like a puppy spotting a bigger dog, which was jammed with juices and casseroles, fresh fruit and white bread, and I was suddenly touched by this innocent, healthy family refrigerator, so oblivious to the debauchery occurring elsewhere in the house.
"Let's go. I'm so excited to swim,"
Emma declared wildly, pulling at my arm like a child, which she was. "I am doing drugs with my 13-year-old sister," I whispered to myself. But a good 10 minutes had passed, and the idea brought only a flutter of happiness. She was a fun girl, my little sister, the most popular girl in Windgap, and she wanted to hang out with me. She loves me like Marion did. I smiled. The X had released its first wave of chemical optimism. I could feel it float up inside me like a big test balloon and splatter on the roof of my mouth, spraying good cheer. I could almost taste it, like a fizzy pink jelly. Kelsey and Kylie began following us to the door, and Emma swung around laughing.
"I don't want you guys to come," she cackled. "You guys get to stay here. Help Jodes get laid. She needs a good fuck."
Kelsey scowled back at Jodes, who hung nervously on the stairs. Kylie looked at Emma's arm around my waist. They glanced at each other. Kelsey snuggled into Emma, put her head on her shoulder.
"We don't want to stay here. We want to come with you," she whined. "Please."
Emma shrugged her away, smiled at her like she was a dumb pony.
"Just be a sweetie and fuck off, okay?" Emma said. "I'm so tired of all of you. You're such bores."
Kelsey hung back, confused, her arms still half outstretched. Kylie shrugged at her and danced back into the crowd, grabbing a beer from an older boy's hands and licking her lips at him, looking back over to see if Emma was watching. She wasn't. Instead, Emma was steering me out the door like an attentive date, down the stairs and onto the sidewalk, where tiny yellow oxalis weeds spurted from the cracks. I pointed.
"Beautiful."
Emma pointed at me and nodded.
"I love yellow when I'm high. You feeling something?"
I nodded back, her face flicking on and off as we walked past street lamps, swimming forgotten, on autopilot in the direction of Adora's. I could feel the night hanging on me like a soft, damp bedgown, and had a flash of the Illinois hospital. Me waking up wet with sweat, a desperate whistle in my ear. My roommate, the cheerleader, on the floor, purple and twitching, the bottle of Windex next to her. A comedic squeaking sound. Post-mortem gas. A burst of shocked laughter from me, here, now, in Windgap, echoing the one I'd loosed in that miserable room in the pale yellow morning. Emma put her hand in mine.
"What do you think of Adora?"
I felt my high wobble, then regain its spin. "I think she's a very unhappy woman," I said, "and troubled."
"I hear her calling out names when she takes her naps. Joya, Marion, you."
"Glad I don't have to hear that," I said, patting Emma's hand. "But I'm sorry you do."
"She likes to take care of me."
"Great."
"It's weird," Emma said. After she takes care of me, I like to have sex.
She flipped up her skirt from behind, flashed me a hot pink thong. I don't think you should let boys do things to you, Emma, because that's what it is. It's not reciprocal at your age.
Sometimes if you let people do things to you, you're really doing it to them, Emma said, pulling another blow pop from her pocket. Cherry. Know what I mean? If someone wants to do fucked up things to you and you let them, you're making them more fucked up. Then you have the control. As long as you don't go crazy.
Emma, I just... But she was already burbling ahead.
I like our house, Emma interrupted. I like her room. The floor is famous. I saw it in a magazine one time. They called it the Ivory Toast, Southern living from a bygone time. Because now, of course, you can't get ivory. Too bad. Really, too bad. She stuck the sucker in her mouth and snatched a firefly from the air, held it between two fingers and ripped out its back end. Wiped the light around her finger to make a glowing ring. She dropped the dying bug into the grass and admired her hand.
Did girls like you growing up? She asked. Because they're definitely not nice to me.
I tried to reconcile the idea of Emma, brash, bossy, sometimes scary, stepping on my heels at the park, what kind of 13-year-old taunts adults like that, with a girl to whom anyone was openly rude. She saw my look and read my thoughts.
I don't mean not nice to me, actually. They do whatever I tell them, but they don't like me. The second I fuck up, the second I do something uncool, they'll be the first to gang up against me. Sometimes I sit in my room before bed, and I write down every single thing I did and said that day. Then I grade it. A for a perfect move, F for I should kill myself, I'm such a loser.
When I was in high school, I kept a log of every outfit I wore each day. No repeating until a month went by.
Like tonight, Dave Rard, who's a very hot junior, told me he didn't know if he could wait a year, you know, to get with me, like until I was in high school. And I said, so don't. And walked away, and all the guys were like, aw. So that's an A. But yesterday, I tripped on Main Street in front of the girls and they laughed. That's an F. Maybe a D, because I was so mean to them the rest of the day Kelsey and Kylie both cried. And Jodes always cries, so it's not really a challenge.
Safer to be feared than loved, I said.
Machiavelli, she crowed, and skipped ahead, laughing. Whether in a mocking gesture of her age or genuine youthful energy, I couldn't tell.
How do you know that?
I was impressed and liking her more every minute. A smart, fucked-up little girl. Sounded familiar.
I know tons of things I shouldn't know, she said, and I began skipping alongside her.
The X had me wired, and while I was aware that under sober circumstances I wouldn't be doing it, I was too happy to care. My muscles were singing.
I'm actually smarter than most of my teachers. I took an IQ test. I'm supposed to be in 10th grade, but Adora thinks I need to be with kids my age. Whatever. I'm going away for high school. To New England.
She said it with the slight wonder of someone who knew the region only through photos. Of a girl harboring Ivy League-sponsored images. New England's where the smart people go. Not that I should judge. I've never been there either.
I've got to get out of here, Emma said with the exhausted affectation of a pampered housewife. I'm bored all the time. That's why I act out. I know I can be a little... off.
With the sex, you mean? I stopped, my heart making rumba thumps in my chest. The air smelled of irises, and I could feel the scent float into my nose, my lungs, my blood. My veins would smell of purple.
Just, you know, lashing out. You know, I know you know.
She took my hand and offered me a pure, sweet smile, petting my palm, which might have felt better than any touch I'd ever experienced.
On my left calf, Freak sighed suddenly.
How do you lash out?
We were near my mother's house now, and my high was in full bloom.